You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Hey guys, welcome to the After Laugh. I'm here with my new friend, Tara Erickson.
Hello.
Hello. It's so funny because you're doing an accent.
Yeah.
I feel like actors always like to burst out into accents.
Yeah.
Do you do it when you're like on the, I do it like at Rite Aid and shit.
I do it just randomly. Yeah. If a checkout person is like, seems lame, I'm like, hello.
Yeah. It's just fun to see what you can get away with.
Well, they perk right up when you got an accent.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's nicer. They give you free shit. They smile at you. It's just life is better with an accent.
People just hate Americans.
That's my hot take.
I do like a Cockney one a lot when I go. I say, hey, look, if I want to go whale watching here, where would I go? What would be the best place, isn't it?
Cockney's easy to get into because it's sloppy.
Because you can just kind of like be, like if you drink a lot, you can just automatically become Cockney.
Straight into Cockney.
And then you can kind of just add weird shit like in it. Hey, I want to go whale watching in it. It doesn't make any sense, but just add in it.
If I have like more than two drinks, I immediately go into like New Jersey because I lived with people from Jersey all throughout like my 20s. And I just sound like I'm an East Coaster always.
Oh, where are you from originally?
Vegas, which is a melting pot. So like who cares?
Yeah. The Vegas, like the person who grows up in Vegas is always an interesting person to me because that's such a bananas place to grow up to.
Yeah. I thought you were going to be like, it's normally a shit show, but.
No, I feel like people who grew up in Manhattan and people who grew up in Vegas, they're actually like pretty put together people. The people that I know that.
Yeah, because we're surrounded by chaos.
Yeah.
And then we're like, okay, no more of that.
Yeah. You got through your first drug addiction at age 12.
Yeah.
And so you're like, now you're fine.
Yeah.
It's the people who like move there later in life. No, everyone I knew who was born in New York was really successful, but they like I had a girlfriend who was born in Manhattan, went to Studio 54 when she was like in high school and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And she but she like lost virginity. She did cocaine at 13.
Oh shit. No, I didn't do any of that fucking shit. I was such a good kid. I just like went to school, got good grades, and then I left to come to LA as soon as I graduated.
Yeah. So you were in private school, public school?
I was in a freaking private school.
With a little outfit and everything.
Yeah, yeah. From 6th to 12th grade, man.
So you were a good girl. You weren't a rebel.
I was good. I was a rebel like in 5th grade. I ran away with the bad kids. In 5th grade. We went to her house and dyed our hair and then came back to school. And I just thought that would be fine. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking.
So you went to her house without telling your parents?
Yes. No, I ran away. Like, we left school in 5th grade. Who has
you
the
had
balls
a, you had
in
a stick
fifth
with
grade?
The fucking the bandana with your clothes in it over your shoulder? Like,
yes. I ran away 2 minutes from home.
Because you were mad?
No, I just was like, in 5th grade, I wanted to be cool so bad. And the cool kids would never accept me. And the one popular kid, he would always toilet paper the outside of mi abuelita's home, which is where I was at a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I was just like the kid who got bullied. And then when I had like one little ounce of acceptance, I was like, I'll take it and I'll dye my hair and I'll do all the bad things. And then they were like, we gotta send her to, this is not good.
So then they sent you to private school after you ran away.
And then they were like, we're
grade.
Not sending you to Brinley. It was like Brinley, it was a bad middle school in Vegas. So they were like, you're gonna be shipped to a private school.
Yeah.
And it'll be better for you. And it was.
Yeah. I think in general, I look back, I mean, I like my public school upbringing, but I look back, I'm like, maybe it would, my parents would threaten private school. Like, that was a threat to them.
Yeah.
And looking back, I'm like, wow, that would have been a better call.
It was literally the best thing that ever happened to me. Yeah. I was like, if I had grown up in, at least in Vegas, the schools are a little rough. In public schools there, I would be a different person, I think. It was good.
Well, so where I'm from in Virginia, there were a lot of really famous big private schools. Like Episcopal High School is one of the biggest private schools in the country. St. Stephen's, St. Bishop, I heard it, whatever. And then T.C. Williams, which is my school, which is like this like huge public school in the middle of like all these private schools. And we had an awful reputation because we had like riots and drive-bys and all sorts of shit. Like, I think at one point we had like the highest rate of teen pregnancy in the nation.
Oh, God.
And then, and so then you kind of feel like kind of cool. You know what I mean?
You feel kind of cool. So,
but then there's a thing where because you're in that type of environment where there's drug dealers and drive-bys, people getting arrested, it never felt cool to do drugs.
Because you were just overexposed to it.
Because it was just like, it was scary.
Yeah.
Because people I knew on the football team were getting arrested and sent to prison.
Oh.
So I was kind of like, it was just scary.
Got it.
It was very much like an urban thing. But then you look at St. Stephen's, which is the public school, the cool kids there, they were all doing coke.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to set yourself apart
from. We also have the money for it. They were fancy.
100%, yeah.
Yeah.
So when I was growing up, I never did any drugs at all. But all the private school kids were all doing drugs.
I was also sober.
You're also
sober. I never drank.
You never drank?
Nope. Never drank till I was like 20.
So what happened? So you moved to LA to become an actress.
Yeah.
You drove out with a car?
Drove out with a vehicle.
A vehicle?
My 2003 Ford Focus.
That's not a bad car.
It was a light blue.
Did you have a little dog color. Or cat or?
No fucking animals.
A TV.
Straight, nothing. Literally nothing. I had a lot, back then, I had a lot of Hello Kitty shit. And I had to live with the two other girls that went to American Musical and Dramatic Academy. We all had to live in a bungalow. AMDA.
So you were with how many girls?
Two others.
And you, was like bunk bed situation?
Yes. Yes. There's literally four bunk beds in one bedroom, and I'm like, can I set up all my Hello Kitty stuff on the couch? Like, you walk in and you're like, who lives here? I guess it's just Tara. It was bad. I went through a phase.
Well, I mean, that's scary. It's your first time away from home for a long time.
Yeah.
And you're in LA.
Yeah.
And you're also like with the mandate of like, you gotta make it now.
Yeah.
You're gonna be an actress. And everyone else there is like, I need this job.
Yeah.
And then you're putting bunk beds.
Yeah, bunk beds. It was weird. Especially weird when someone tries to sneak in somebody they want to do it with.
Of course, you want to do it.
You're like, there is no way that you could be quiet enough for me to not hear you on the top bunk. Like, who?
Oh, they were trying to do that. Like, top
yes.
Bunk. What about like, the what about the sock on the doorknob?
That I can't hear it like 2 feet below you.
What about the sock on the doorknob? Never did the sock on the doorknob?
No, this is like, they maybe would be so heated up that they like had to, they just thought I'm like so knocked out asleep that like I wouldn't hear. And of course, what am I going to do? Wake up in the middle of them doing it and
guys,
be like, I can hear you guys.
Stop it.
You know, nobody does that.
Yeah.
You just sit there silently and you're like, fuck my life.
Or you're kind of like,
No, I was like, fuck my life. No.
So you come to AMDA. Now, AMDA is an American Musical. I think I applied to that, too. It's a two-year program, right?
Yes.
Yes. Do you feel, I've had this discussion with actors, because I went to NYU for grad school, right?
Okay, correct. Yeah.
And I don't ever want to have regrets. I think that's stupid. It's also fun to make fun of the shit that you did in your life and look back and say, like, it was great that I went there, but mostly because I was in New York and I got to fuck around and be in New York and learn about who I was as a human being.
Right.
But in terms of like a 3-year grad program where you're doing Chekhov and Shakespeare and you're never even in front of a fucking camera.
Right.
And the only people that are even celebrated coming out of there are the people that become TV movie stars.
Right.
So there's nothing, it's completely antithetical to itself. It doesn't really, it doesn't hold. The whole premise of the school doesn't really hold because you're sitting there going like, look, it's great to know Shakespeare, but even if you're like
it's only really useful if you're going to go and then do Shakespeare.
Yeah. And then if you spend your entire life in a regional theater where you do a Shakespeare fucking portfolio
great.
The whole time.
Great.
And that's
but
one
you
people.
You would have to keep it up after school. Meaning we had to do Shakespeare and Chekhov, but I'm like, you'd have to continually do that throughout your 20s to be any good at it for the rest of your life.
Yes.
You can't just do it a few times in school and be like, I know how to do it. Hell no. I'm never auditioning for any
crazy,
Chekhov
right?
or Shakespeare play ever.
We had one day for TV and film auditioning in front of a camera. One day.
One day?
3-year graduate program.
Wow. That's sad.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
This is the late 90s. So this is
okay. They weren't up. They weren't
but
hip.
At the same time, like you'd think like, all right, you should be able to do something.
I would assume.
Yeah, it was a very weird. So anyway, what was your experience with AMDA?
We only had one class that put us in front of a camera and it was towards the it was all second year, but it wasn't in the first year because I was it's a musical theater program. So it's a lot of like singing and then dancing. You do musical theater dance and you do ballet and then you have tap and then you have to go to musical theater, sing the songs, and you have to go to acting class. It's like all of that. You're just
everything
thrown
combined.
In.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do like prereqs, which is the reason I chose it, because I was so close to going to Berklee College of Music because I was a singer. I still sing now, but mainly I act. I fell in love with acting at AMDA. Because in my brain at 18, I was like, I'll do musical theater. It combines both of them. And then I realized comedic acting was more where I belonged.
Yeah. But you don't find that you can do comedic acting in Broadway musicals, for example?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think I lost the passion for being in musicals a couple years after I graduated. There was a weird moment. I graduated what I would have been 20, and then when I was 21, I moved to Hawaii to be a dolphin trainer. Had like how my life went is that I had a commercial agent, wasn't going out enough, and I still had a little bit of like acne that was like recovering, and I thought, okay, this commercial stuff isn't working out for me. Because, you know, anyone who's like, if you don't book with like within a year, you just think like you're not going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So I thought if I worked at SeaWorld, it could combine the acting and the entertainment side along with like working with dolphins and whales, because I used to go there every summer with my mom. So I applied to the internship at Dolphin Quest in Hawaii. I went there when I was 21.
So you're still at AMDA while you're applying for the dolphin?
No, this is like a year after I graduated.
So you're after, you have a commercial agent.
Yeah. I book like one thing and then I'm like, this isn't working out. I'll just combine stuff. I got to figure it out.
But let me say this. So like commercial auditions, right?
Yeah.
I haven't been on a commercial audition in probably like, I mean, I've sent in a couple self-tapes recently, but like I've been a commercial in a room for maybe like 5 years.
Oh, really?
Because there's something about, and this isn't for everyone. This is just for me.
Right.
My weird childhood trauma or whatever it is. There's something about going into a room full of actors that are auditioning for a commercial where you're talking to Rice Krispies or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
That is so depressing to me.
Really?
And I know you can make so much. And I think if I'd ever gotten like a national commercial that paid me like $50K, I probably would change my tune. But I haven't. I've only done like little things here and there.
Yeah.
I mean, once you're in it and voiceover and commercials, you can make so much money. But I would get like, I think 1 year I was on hold for 9 things, and two of them were Super Bowl commercials.
Oh, dope.
They all fell through.
And you were released. Like, yeah, I think every year I'm released from like 4 to 5 commercials, which is great. I mean, you have to get the audition first and get the call back and then beat out a bunch of people to get on a veil. And then like it's between you and two other people.
It's almost harder to get a commercial than it is to get like a network TV show.
It's, I don't know. I mean, commercials is where I book. And it's harder for my agents to get me into TV and film, even though they're like, we don't understand why these people aren't seeing you. You have great reel. You have a lot of material. But commercially, I do fine. They call me in. Sometimes I go straight to callback. It's just because they've seen me for enough years. I put in my face in front of them and they're like, oh, we can trust her to do the work. And I find it fun. But my agents mostly send me out for comedic stuff, or spokesperson stuff. I haven't been on anything where it's really, really boring or I hate it. Uh-huh. And if it is, I won't do it. I just decline.
Had any good luck with like national commercials and national spots?
No, those have been tough. There have been some, like the Little Caesars. I booked that like the last year of the pandemic, and that was probably one of the best campaigns I ever did in all of my time booking commercials. That was just so much fun. All comedic spots. I think we filmed 3 in a day.
Oh, that's great.
And that was national, and people would just text me constantly of like, you're on my TV right now.
That's
yeah.
So great. Yeah,
and that was fun.
That.
And I liked being attached to that brand because of their comedic point of view. They make funny commercials, and those are the spots that I want to be a part of.
And are you still connected with those people, with Little Caesars?
I mean, they switch it up. Like if you ever see a Little Caesars commercial, there's never the same actors on the
next
commercial.
It's not like Flo from Progressive or.
Yeah, no, it's not like that. It's always new people.
Yeah.
And they're always changing. Every commercial always has a new director and a new team.
Yeah.
Unless it's the people behind the camera, meaning producers and stuff like that. They don't care who the director hires.
Yeah. This is one thing I found with audition. And this is auditioning for like regional podunk fucking dinner theater.
Right.
industrials, commercials.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the president of Warner Brothers. The lower on the totem pole you are, mm-hmm. in the terms of the power you have in the industry, the shitter you are to the actors, I find. Like, I'll audition for like a summer theater gig, and they're like, you know what? I don't know. I don't feel like you're really hitting the mark, or whatever the fuck it is. Yeah. They're like shitty to me. I'm like, what? One time a woman yelled at me because it was a Rice Krispies commercial.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to be giving CPR to the fucking like Rice Krispie or something because okay. it was like dead.
Oh god.
It didn't have the snap, crackle, pop. And I was like, okay, you're like Noah Wiley in ER. I'm like, okay, come on. Like, no, that's not how he plays it. That's not how Noah Wiley does it. Like, literally yelled. I was like,
well, that's unprofessional. They should no longer be a casting director. And yeah, it's any actor going in there and you have to resuscitate a Rice Krispie. You do not yell at the actor for how they choose to resuscitate.
God, it was so. And that was like the first nail in the coffin. Anyway, what were you going to say? I interrupted you about
that. I have no idea.
Yes.
I already forgot. ADHD kicking in.
Hey, two people with ADHD, this is going to go fucking awesome. All right, so dolphin training.
Yeah.
You got accepted.
Yeah.
You go to Hawaii. What island, Hawaii?
The Big Island.
Kona.
Yeah, on the Kona side. I live
Hello,
there.
Mike David. Cheers, Bill Dawes. That's great. That's a beautiful place to live. How long were you there for?
I was only there for like 4 months.
4 months.
Sure. It's just like they put
you
in.
You got the training.
Yeah.
And then what made you decide?
Which counts as a semester towards college, which I never went to a college. Like, they'll accept you if you have enough animal experience and write a good enough essay, I was like, I'm not an idiot. Here you go. but I didn't need that. I came back and then I did all of the testing at SeaWorld. So I went there mainly because SeaWorld won't see you unless you've had training, right?
And how long is the training? Is it 4 months?
It's the 4 months. Yeah. You go through a whole animal training series.
Do you feel while you're doing this, because I'm curious about this, because I've watched all the documentaries, not to brag, do you feel while you're doing this like maybe that there's something wrong with the industry of animal training?
This was before Blackfish came. Yeah. Is that the movie? I've never
That's
seen it because
them,
it would hurt my heart too much.
Yeah.
I can't stand animals being hurt or whatever. So I was just exposed to SeaWorld for every summer of my life. It was just so
magical.
Much fun. See, it's just like, I love the dolphins. I love the orcas. I just love the animals. So when I was there, I mean, those places exist in order to provide people with an education in regards to safe fishing practices, and make sure you buy tuna that has dolphin safe on it.
Yeah.
Here, if you're able to touch a dolphin, you're going to care more about what you can do to save them and make the environment better. So I think that's why those places exist. Of course, yes, somebody's trying to make money, to keep it open. But I think mostly zoos and places like that, you'd hope that
everyone's
people
well-intended.
See the animal and would go, hey, I'm going to remember that. I've actually been in close contact and now I might be able to change my life in better ways to better support animals.
So when you're, because I've done a couple dolphin experiences. Mm-hmm. One was, where was it? One, like, you couldn't really touch a dolphin. Another one was like Mexico and you could like grab on the fin and ride around.
Yeah, we weren't allowed to do that. Dolphin Quest had very strict rules. You can't ride the dolphin. You're not allowed to hold onto the tail. I can send them off to do tricks and you can touch their belly and like you could make them do a trick and stuff like that. But there was no riding or pulling on them or any of that.
So here's a question that I'm curious about. I'm sure people must have asked you about this.
Uh-huh.
Because there's all sorts of shit on the internet about this. Dolphins be horny.
Oh yeah.
And
God,
they tried
when
to
we
fuck,
would give
right?
them recreational play, which is we would put like yoga mats in the water or we throw ice in there that they can play with it and toys. It would literally be like Lono on his back and his dick is just out on top of the yoga mat, just floating around. And you'd see families being like, slowly get up and take the kids away because it's like right on the beach. So it's like, you just have to not look. It's not like you can put a wall up. It's everyone can see into the like all of the tanks.
Do the dolphins ever, because I swear to God, maybe this is apocryphal, is that the word I'm looking for, but like you hear stories of like dolphin rape.
I know. I hate, that's another thing that I also like, I'm like, don't why, how do you even get that close, and like what's happening, like how is the all of it makes me so uncomfortable, because I'm just like, I don't leave them alone if they're in the wild, and if they're in an enclosure, please don't take your fucking clothes off. You should be in a wetsuit.
Yeah,
come on, people. Like,
but
all
you've
of
heard
it
about
just,
all this stuff, obviously.
Yeah, but I hate it. I'm like, oh, I hate it so much.
So anyway, back to the real world. You were so for 4 months you did this, and you enjoyed it, and you liked it, and it was were you thinking like, oh, maybe I'll do this as a career?
Yeah, because I went to SeaWorld, I passed all the tests, like I became a rescue scuba diver, I learned to swim for like 2 minutes holding my breath.
Trained
with an Olympic swimmer to get that done, and then you have to train like in the ocean to get used to 50 degree water, because when you go to take the test at SeaWorld, you have to do it in the orca tank, and that water is really, really cold. And so you just have to have all these, you know, skills that I had. And I spent, you know, a year and a half of my life training at the YMCA in Hollywood before I went to, you know, before I went to Hawaii for the internship. And then once I passed the testing at SeaWorld, I sort of had a moment where I was like, I'm going to have to move to San Diego, and I would be in it like at the lower level a trainer here at SeaWorld, and that would change my entire life.
Yeah.
Meaning I probably would not move back to LA and continue acting.
Yeah.
And it was just at that point, I just was like, oh, I did it. This is ADHD. Oh, I did all the stuff that I was like, that getting into that was what I wanted to go. Like, I could do it. And then I just decided, I was like, it's too big of a decision.
You had to make one or the other.
I didn't want to give up so quickly on acting, because I knew I would probably miss it. And if I moved to San Diego, I would get stuck there. And I wasn't sure leaving all of my friends that were still in LA. And I'm glad I came back. I mean,
I
love
peace
LA.
Peace out. Peace out, SeaWorld.
It's like once you get the task and you do it well, you're like, oh, I think, all right, let's move on.
But that's so cool. Is it a skill that you can use today? Like, can you show up? Can you travel somewhere? Like, here's my card. I'm certified. I'm going to go hang out with these fucking dolphins.
God, no, not. I mean, I would know how to do stuff. I would understand like what they were doing. Yeah. But I don't know how.
What's your craziest story from dealing with dolphins? And do you have any?
I think the one fun story is that we would have a med bay, so we'd have to take their blood. There was a dolphin we had to take her blood because she had just had a stillborn baby, and the dolphins who are in under human care, they get very well taken care of.
Yeah.
So we had to take her blood so that you could put her on meds. They do put dolphins on antidepressants, and and you have to. Yeah,
how can you tell a dolphin's depressed?
Well, ask that vet, man. Ask the vet, because they get vitamins every day. We would shove vitamins in the fish. So different dolphins got different vitamins depending upon their age. But when we were in the med tank, I was on the closest side to where the big tank is. And one of her babies, Pukanala, was next to the gate, because they can be there. It's just like a little fencing. And she moved a bit. You have to have 12 trainers hold the dolphin in the med bay in case they start like thriving in there.
Yeah.
Thrashing. I said thriving. In case they start thrashing when they're taking their blood. Most of the time you can train them and they get marked in a fish for being steady. Anyway, the Pukanala just came and put her little beak through the gate and just snipped my belly button when her mom moved, and it hurt, but it didn't like leave a mark. She wasn't like taking skin off. They just get mad. They get upset. I mean, there's times when I would bring people into a tank and just what was his name? It started with an M, and I loved him. He was my favorite dolphin, and I can't remember his name right now. He would just turn on his side, open his mouth, and come straight for the stairs where the people's feet would go in, because he just wasn't in a mood. And I'd go, all right, we have to move. Let's get another dolphin. And they'd be fine. That's why you have all the tanks there.
Yeah.
They have personalities. All of them are different. And sometimes they're just not in the mood, and
of
that's
course.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you probably missed one of them or two of them when you left. You're like,
Makana, that was his name.
Makana.
Okay. He was so sweet.
So then you're like, fuck it. You made the choice. Sophie's choice. You're like, I'm going to stay here.
Yeah.
Do acting. And then what was your first? So because you kind of have like you do like a lot of you write and direct as well.
Mm-hmm. I recently started that. That's been in the last like 3 years.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, I've written for many years, but the directing films has been newer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you like it?
I love it. I mean, I've been making films for the last like 5 or 6 years, but me choosing to direct is fun, but it's a lot of work, almost too much. So yeah. For Killjoy 3, which Killjoy was my very first thing that I directed, and it did really well. It's in festivals now. And I'm going to make a third one, but I have another director attached to it, even though I'm the creator and I still wrote it. I'll still be executively producing it and making sure everything has my stamp of approval on it. But the directing part of it, when you don't have a budget, is really, 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 really hard because you don't have help. So if it's just me and I have to get actors, make sure everybody's there on time, make sure there's crafty. It's like, yeah, I did everything for like all of most of the films that I did. And that is, it's so much stress.
Yeah, absolutely. I just saw a film in the theater because I'm an ally. I saw Bros in the theater.
Yeah.
I like Billy Eichner. I think he's
funny. Oh, he's great. I haven't seen that yet, but he's great.
I want to see Bros. I know there's like a lot of, it's not doing very well. I want to support. And he's on Twitter like, motherfuckers, you homophobic assholes. So he's like, let's see what's going on. And it's interesting because he wrote it.
Yeah.
And he directed it and he starred in it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you're a creative and you're an actor, like that's really what you want to do.
Yep.
That's what you want to do.
Correct.
But because at the end of the day, we're all kind of like, we all want to be benevolent dictators as a creative.
Yeah.
Like you think that your point of view and the way that you want to do things is really the way it should be done. And that's almost across the board with creatives.
Right.
Whether it's comedy, acting, whatever it is. So it's really, I've always had a real tough time working with bad directors and mediocre directors. Or I don't mind if they're bad as long as they just get out of my way and let me do what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if they're bad and they're forcing their opinion on me, I'm like, you're stupid. Don't tell me what to do, dummy.
Yeah.
And particularly in theater, you get a lot of that.
Yeah.
The best of the best aren't usually directing like off Broadway in New York.
Right, you know what I mean?
So so I understand his need to do that, but the movie suffers.
Yeah.
Because there's no one there to say, "Hey, this is the first studio produced gay rom-com."
Mhm.
Maybe not so gay.
Right.
Maybe just 15% less gay.
Yeah.
And
do you think that was the issue?
It was 100%.
Like, okay.
Well, there's two issues. One is, I want to talk with someone about this. So bad. One is like, at the end of the day, you can say people are homophobic, but people, particularly when it comes to film and everything else, people are way more ugly phobic.
Yeah.
They just don't want to look at ugly people on the screen.
And that's what? Not, so people, there's ugly people in the movies?
That's
not about saying?
Fat or anything. That's just like ugly people. Yeah, the people are just not attractive people.
Interesting.
Like Billy Eichner, God bless him. Like he's an awkward dude.
Yeah. But he's cute in his own way.
He's kind of like, he kind of has like in, I guess in a Woody Allen way, how women liked Woody Allen for some bizarre reason. But he just, his body is kind of like misshapen. He has a droopy eye and an underbite, but he is cute and I get it. But at the same time, you're also looking at going like, what if he'd cast a hot gay dude?
I get, but there is, I watched that trailer. There's a super hot guy that
super hot
falls for whatever. Super hot guy, I haven't seen the movie yet. So I guess that's again, I haven't
everyone
seen else, it.
Because everyone is part of the coalition, you know, in the movie. And that's great. And everyone's represented. There's non-binary, lesbian, trans. I get that's amazing.
Right.
But I think that, I'm just talking about the general public. Number one, like,
yeah,
people are fine with Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal are boning each other
right
out. Even straight dudes are like, okay,
right,
I get it.
Was this done in as tasteful of a way or is it?
Oh my god, no.
Okay,
as a matter of fact, I did a comedy show
because that's very different
I did a comedy show in Vancouver just a couple nights ago, and there were these four gay dudes in the front row, and I said, look, I saw Bros, I'm an ally, and they're like, yeah. And I go, and it was good. They're like, and they were really? Like, it's really gay.
Oh, my God.
The gay dude's like, it's a lot.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, that should just be your argument. That's the only way so that it's not coming.
Because if you're trying to, like, slide in, like, look, this is normal. This is, like, gay yes. behavior. It's just like everyone else. And then you look at it, you're like, so I asked a guy, I go, is that realistic?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, yeah, it's completely realistic.
I think Miss Marvel, the show on Disney, I think I watched all of it, but they did a really good job in introducing her as a character for being a lesbian.
Oh, is she a lesbian? I didn't know that.
Don't they introduce her at the end?
Captain Marvel in the Marvel thing.
No. Miss Marvel, the TV show on Disney. Where she, yeah. So in that TV show, it was dropped maybe like a year ago. They do a really nice job of taking it like nice and slow and telling the story of like, we know where it's going to end up. She's going to have to probably come out to her parents that she's gay.
Yeah.
People might. My memory is terrible and people might leave comments being like, she doesn't end up gay, but I'm like, doesn't she? Unless I'm confusing with a different show, and I don't think I am. I haven't watched it in a minute. I finished the show a while ago, but they do a really good job of the balancing act of showing just how it is in real life, that she's going to have to meet struggles and challenges. Yeah. And they're not like, they don't have to like overly show it. Like we know what,
yeah,
it doesn't need to be eyes wide shut.
Yeah. I think that when I think about like the whole dialectic happening in America right now, where everyone's pitted against each other, particularly
sure.
when it comes to sexual politics or racial politics.
Yeah.
And I look at a movie like Bros, and I liked it. I mean, I enjoyed it. I would recommend it. But it's a lot of, like, even when I go and watch a rom-com, I don't get off on watching people make out in rom-com.
That's
everything around that's what's
it's
interesting.
It's the story. It's what's around it is the story that led up to it. You want that story and
but
that life in that moment.
A lot of making out and a lot of fucking
okay
and orgies and.
Well,
and it's kind of done in a comedic way, but you're also kind of like, who is this? Who is this for?
Who's it for? Yeah.
Because you're not gonna, because women love rom-coms.
Well, now I really got
to
see
hey,
it.
Hey, honey, come to the rom-com. Most straight guys, and I grew up in theater, so I'm whatever,
sure.
I'm fine. But like most straight guys in Wichita.
They want to see the story. The story excites them to, when you see a good rom-com, you put yourself in that person's 100%. Position and you just go, oh, it's not even the kiss or that the sex looks good.
Yeah.
It's the feeling that it gives
100%.
You. And so if this is giving you like a feeling where you're like, this is a lot.
Yeah.
Then it might not be.
And then the second half, it's really sweet and beautiful and you get into it. But the first half, they front load it with a lot of.
Yeah. And it probably takes you out of it.
Yeah, it does. So it's a little, I don't know. I got to talk to someone about it, some other podcast.
Yeah,
but definitely watch it.
Seen it, man.
All right. So you've been you're doing the commercials. You've been, and you do like horror films. You just do comedy,
mm-hmm.
huh? Mostly comedy.
Mostly comedy. The first film that I made is called Prime Your Life. That's a dark comedy. The ones that once I started directing, I was part of this group, and still am part of this group called Just Scare Me, which is a film group. The genre is like horror.
Uh-huh.
It started out really new with a friend who runs it. He's a director. There was people who would ask me to be in their shorts a bunch just as an actor. And I'd roll through. And then they were like, you need to direct something. I was like, oh, okay. And so I directed Killjoy just out for fun. And I was like, oh, this turned out well. People seem to really like
that it. That was a feature length?
It's fucking 3 minutes. It's a super short, but it got into Screen Fest and just like a lot of film festivals and won some awards just for a best short and stuff.
Yeah.
And that made me just want to make more. For me as an actor, yes, I'm an actor first. I'm a director and like a writer. That all comes after out of the necessity of me wanting to act more.
Of course, yeah.
So, and Buzz, who's the head of the Just Scare Me, he's like, I want you to direct something that you're not in. And I was like, yeah, me too. It would be easier. And the stuff would probably be awesome because I wouldn't have to worry about, it's really hard to check a shot if you're also directing. Cause I want to keep the clock rolling.
Of course.
Want to keep it moving.
Yeah.
So it's like when you're the lead and the director and you're also kind of the executive producer and your first AD.
One more take.
It's a lot, but, horror, dark comedy, horror. That's what I try to combine. Like for Killjoy, there's some comedy and then there's blood and zombie effects in it. That's what I love. So Killjoy 3 is going to be bigger and better than that, and we got to raise a lot of money for it. But
how do you raise the because that's another thing too when you think about creating content, because everyone's mm-hmm. like, well, now content is king, just create.
Right.
Everyone asks me for advice. They go, what do I do, and I'm just like, just create content and put it out there.
Right.
When YouTube is your own studio.
Yep.
You have your own studio and everyone has a fucking iPhone.
Yep.
So there's really no excuse. I mean, I'm not doing it, but there's no excuse
for
everyone else.
If you have a space and a phone, you can do the thing.
What you want to do is to quote unquote make it, or like you have your own production, mm-hmm. you know, company.
Yeah.
That's on your phone and YouTube, and you can just do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard. I mean, the camera's now on. I mean, I think the camera on the new iPhone is better than the Red camera was 5 years ago.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's very easy to shoot in 4K on an iPhone.
So, but when you it comes to like raising money, I've always sort of not really been a part of that process.
Yeah,
I know it's difficult as fuck.
Yeah.
Is that something you enjoy doing or you're good at?
No,
or?
I don't like it. For Killjoy 1 and then for 2. I did do 2, but I'm like, I'm not as proud of that film. It's cool. It's cool. It's good for YouTube. My YouTube audience did give me money to help me make that film.
Oh, good. Killjoy 1 was... Did you do like a GoFundMe or anything?
No. I legit was on my YouTube and I was like, I'll start a Venmo. It's at A Real Killjoy. Give me money on Venmo. Because I was like, I don't want to do the Indiegogo because you have to like meet a certain... I just needed whatever they could give me because Killjoy 1 was all on me. I didn't ask anybody for any money. Yeah. So that was just out of my own pocket. For 2, I was like, whatever anybody can give me, send it through Venmo. And they did.
Yeah.
And that helped a lot because when I'm the one who's also editing and I have to do sound and like the music, it's just so much because I'm a one woman band over here trying to make these films. But for the other ones, I've started directing with my very good friend, Skylar Caleb. We make short films together and now we split the tasks mostly. And that's been helpful. But for Killjoy 3, I am putting probably close to like $700 into just making and shooting an Indiegogo campaign video because we have to rent a green screen psych and you know, just getting costumes together and stuff so that the Indiegogo video is cool enough that people go, let's give to this project, because we'll have to raise close to $20,000 to $30,000 to make Killjoy 3, which is a short film, only 6 minutes. People don't realize how
$30,000, 6 minutes still seems a little excessive. Excessive. Well, it seems. What's the main cost there?
Zombies. So if you want zombies, prosthetics and makeup, hair and makeup, just for one is like close to $1,000 if you want it to look good.
That doesn't include post-production.
No, God, no. That doesn't include special effects. We'd need to find a special effects and also an editor, because I don't want to edit this one. It's going to be bigger and there's going to be green screen effects and it's also going to have anime visuals in it. Uh-huh. So there's a lot more that goes into it. But mainly it's renting a warehouse, costumes, but it's mostly the zombies. The zombies cost a lot of money, and if I need a fake practical head, because if at one point some juice goes down, I need a makeup artist to be able to build a head, and just a head on its own is probably $800 to replicate an actor, stuff like that. That it'll all go in the breakdown of the video, because trust me, when people, I'm like, short film, you know, that much, and when you see a short film that's good and has special effects and is done really well, and the zombies don't look like shit.
Yeah.
That's where all the money goes.
Of course.
Yeah.
I've been doing I did a few little spoof. The good thing about horror is it's such a niche market.
You could literally shoot it in your studio apartment, spray some blood somewhere, and it costs you zero money and everybody loves it.
And even if it's really bad, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's not gonna be like, what? I looked at your IMDb, you were in this movie. So I've done three sort of like comedy horror films with a woman named Lauren Francesca. I don't know if you know her.
I don't.
But she's
that's cool.
She does a bunch of, but she raised the money. I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but she, I think she raises partly on OnlyFans.
Oh, dope.
Which is a great, like, hey, if you can show your feet bikini and make some money and
absolutely.
Get some nerd in the Midwest to send you $5,000.
Everybody has always asked, like, why don't you do an OnlyFans? I'm like, well, I'm not going to get nude. And they're like, you don't have to. You could, like, cook eggs in a bikini. And I'm like, yeah, but I would never, ever get a role on Disney or something sweet if I had an OnlyFans page. That's going to affect my career in a lot of ways. Commercially is where I make my money.
How they know it's you? How, don't you just give yourself a different name and put on glasses or something?
It's a commercial I just shot 6 months ago. They had to do a background check. I get a lot of background checks prior to even hiring me. God. They would like to book you, send in your background check.
The background check.
That is what happens on commercials when they have to.
Now, by background check, what does that mean, though?
They check your whole background. Yeah, they send like you to the criminal FBI record and stuff.
Yeah, but that's not going to be like, that's not an anonymous OnlyFans is going
to
show up.
Trust me. If they're asking for all of my socials and doing a background check, they will find a way to find me on OnlyFans. ads and they'll go, we can't give her the job. Why? Because she's on OnlyFans.
Interesting. I just feel so many people have, that you haven't done.
I should put OnlyFans first to make a bunch of money. I put my somewhat career that I might get onto Disney one day first before I make an OnlyFans, which is probably dumber for me. I should probably just do it, but I get too scared of the outcome that I would lose gigs over it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think she really cares or whatever, but she made these three films with, like, I think some Indiegogo, a little bit OnlyFans, just funded herself.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, the actors are doing it for like $150 a day.
Right.
There's no real stars. I mean, the way a lot of these indie films work is you get stars that are like stars.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like me putting myself in Killjoy 3. You might go, star?
But what I mean is like the lead actor from Revenge of the Nerds is in this movie.
Yeah, great.
But is there, you know?
Yeah.
1984.
Yeah, a little burnt out, looking for gigs, looking for jobs.
By Ling, who is hot.
Yeah.
In the late 90s.
Absolutely.
So, like, a lot of those people. Like, yeah. Tom Sizemore was in the last one. And he's, you know, he's probably on a toilet right now with a needle in his arm.
Totally. Yeah.
So there's a lot of that going on in this world.
Yes, for sure.
Do you look at, when you're making a film, like, even a short, you go, we should try to get an actor with a name to get some...
A little bit, because I think it would help the film. Like, for this one, I'm like, there is a brother role, and I am more of like, who can I bring up that I know to be in this, who's an actor who's like working at it or would be a good fit? Someone I know who'd be cool on set. But yeah, right now I'm like, if I could find a brother who was like a little bit of a name who liked the concept enough, maybe they watch one and they're like, this is cool.
So to play your brother.
To play my brother.
Do you have anyone in mind? Do you have any like actors in mind?
My good friend, Craig Tovey, who directed Prime Your Life, which is a short film I'm in, which is the dark comedy. He was like, I want to play the brother. And he's a good actor, too. Yeah. He's mainly a director now, but I'm like, he's a very close friend.
Does he look like you? I guess it doesn't really matter.
No, and I don't think it really matters. I mean, I'd literally hire anyone of any ethnicity to go, like, it doesn't need to be explained. If he's my brother, it could be from, you're a half-brother, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I haven't worried too much about that. I don't know yet who I would want. If I could get someone with a name, it would help the project. It always does if you have someone, but again, it's not going to help it that much. I'm the lead.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to give that up. That's, you know.
So are you working towards a feature? Is that kind of the goal?
I think the goal, once I made Killjoy, the goal was maybe to work towards a feature, and now it's more a series. I think it would work well as like on Shudder as a series if they could bring a real Killjoy to life, 30-minute episodes with zombies and stuff. I think it would be well fit in that arena for Sam Jones, who is my character. I think she would fit well in the TV world. A feature, sure. It just, to me, a feature film is very daunting. Yes. Short films are easier for me, that if it's not great and perfect, it's 7 minutes of somebody's life. It's not 90 minutes where you're missing shots and we didn't get this thing. Like, that's hard. I missed a shot in Killjoy 1 and it was easy enough to be like, it's just me. Bring the DP to this desert real quick on a day. It takes 30 minutes.
Yeah.
The feature is just, it's so much money and so much time. And it's just a big commitment. If someone else was like, I want to put you in this, that's what I want. I'm an actor first. And I'm like, just everybody else do the thing. I know how to do everything. I don't want to.
I can talk in front of a camera. Yeah. I look good. Don't make me. Do you have a connection with Shudder that you can actually be like, yo, Shudder?
I wish. My friend was like, my manager might know somebody at Shudder. So once I make three, and she also has written the pilot, my friend Mary O'Neill, who plays Melissa in A Real Killjoy, she wanted to write the pilot. And I was like, great. Cause I'm like, cool. Once it's written, I'll give notes on it whatnot. But I'm not obsessed with the writing or my name, like as directing, I'll put, my point of view on it. But the pilot is good. It's fun. I think if I finish three, and maybe if we submit the pilot along with it, once it gets notes and is like perfected, maybe they'll go, hey, there's maybe a shot here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they might go, man, she's been doing this for a long time. Maybe you should give her a shot.
I'm a big fan of that. Now, do you have any fun intersectional things that you can kind of like throw out there to make people pay attention. Like, I know this girl, she's an actress and singer, and she can't get an agent or da da da. And I said, well, do you have any, like, I was like, do you have a reel? She's like, I don't have a reel. And I was like, and I'm trying to help her. I was like, would you, I was like, what's your ethnicity? She goes, well, I'm half Native American. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, that's enough.
Nobody, just walk into Netflix, be like, yo, give me a series.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need a reel.
Do you have anything fun? I mean, they are really looking to like promulgate female directors in the business.
Yes.
So there's probably grants and fellowships and all sorts of things you
could. Well, I was approached by a comedian friend, Jay Black. He writes movies, and he was like, hey, I want to put in your name to this producer in Pittsburgh. We're making another feature, but I want it to be have a female director. And I was like, all right, Jay. I was like, yeah, I've made these shorts, but that's it. If I send my, I don't have a director's reel. I've it's me, actor first, director, all this stuff second. Yeah. I'll send you what I've got, but he might go, is this a joke? So I just wrote an email saying, if you just want to have a conversation and talk, me as a director, I just want stuff to seem natural. So it's because I'm an actor, I feel like I can talk to actors better, 100%. But I'm not going to be overly obsessed with, I rely on my DP and gaffers to go, how can we make this the coolest shot? Like, I can see through a visual of like, I want it there and maybe at a low angle, always keep the camera moving. I don't like stagnant shots. Yeah. So I have a little bit of a point of view as a director, but my point of view, I think the strongest part of me as a director is that I'm an actor who knows how to talk to other actors and I think get out what I want and what I need for the film from them.
So you feel like you know how to coach actors well?
I feel like, not like I have a ton of experience on it, but I it's been fun for me to get certain things out of people that are on set with me and me being happy with the outcome. I was like, oh, that's cool that I could give them that note or say a certain thing and I could get that out of them. That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah.
I've never directed anything before, but people always tell me, well, people tell me I should direct just because I'm a pain in the ass and I always have opinions. So they're like, you should direct. But I do, I like coach people in auditions and it is really a cool process. I think that if I were to have a successful directing career, I probably wouldn't care about acting.
Really? Yeah.
Does that make sense? It would itch that scratch.
Yes.
Scratch that itch, rather.
It would, I think, because, and that was another thing, if I throw myself into too much into directing, am I now not going to have time to like do these self tapes for my agent to be an actor? Because I still think I would feel, if I'm like, if I'm going out here to these film festivals and I'm a director, whatever, which I am now, but it was like that continually and I lost momentum on the other end of it as an actor, I feel like it would make me sad. Even if me being a director and a writer and in the things was really great, I got scared that I would lose too much of my time to directing because I don't have a budget for a huge team.
Interesting.
So when Jay approached me, I was like, well, I know you guys have a budget, so there would be a team, meaning I have a first AD and just a team of people that you get on a normal film.
Yeah.
That really the director sits behind Video Village and is like, does this shot look good? Okay, let's see what we can do here. Right?
Yeah.
Great. I would love that job.
Yeah.
but I'm sure there's other people who that's all they do is just directing, and that's not me. I can bring a different woman's point of view to it and a different eye, which may be better than a lot of other directors out there. Just because I'm on the other side of the camera as an actor.
Yeah,
so
I think it's interesting because as an actor and a comic, like we're pretty low down the totem pole.
Yes. Right,
in entertainment. Comedy below acting for sure. But they're both pretty low down. And then I know that whenever like a comic gets really big, they usually stop doing comedy. And then people are like, oh, they're selling out or they're like scared. Like they kind of like shit on, like, I mean, I'll go down the list, like Jim Carrey, Eddie Murphy, Steve Martin, even Ron Williams stopped for a while. They just stopped doing it. And they were at the height of
their
career.
Why do you think that is? They just are like, I've
because
made it.
It's better
to stop when you're at the height of it.
On the bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah.
It's just better. You don't want to be making $10 million a movie and then show up at a club and have some drunk bitch fucking heckle you for no goddamn reason.
Right.
And you're like, I have to deal with this.
Except I think it keeps your chops fresh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine giving that up. But at the same time, another example, like I kind of, when I was in New York in the early 2000s, I was out of school, like I knew Tom McCarthy. He was like kind of a little bit of a buddy of mine.
Yeah.
He was he was writing plays, and he was an actor. Mm-hmm. Really good looking guy.
Yeah.
Good actor. Did like Meet the Parents, did a bunch of other things. And then he just got into the writing, and then, you know, he won an Oscar for Spotlight.
Oh, yeah. That was him.
And he's now the writer and producer of Alaska Daily, which I'm doing.
It's so good. Wait, you're going to be on that show?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Shut up. What episode?
Well, let me tell you something.
Oh, my God. Get me on that fucking show.
I shouldn't say
this. I'll pay you a ton of money. Get me on that motherfucking show. Tell that casting to be like, I got a friend. Put her on that show. The show is so good. The pilot is great.
Is
you should watch it. Yes. I think I immediately tweeted about it, or maybe I forgot to. The show, it's ABC. So you write it off. I saw it. It popped up, and I'm like, am I going to? I'll give it a shot. It's Hilary Swank. She's won an Oscar. She's great. I believe her when she speaks.
Yeah.
It starts out, and I'm like, yep. Yep, everything about this. There's West Wing actors in here. Every actor that he has, he's a smart guy, because yeah. Every actor he has is very believable in the part that they are. And they're actors you can just throw in there. And when they speak, you believe them. Thank yeah. freaking Christ. And it's not just a regular ABC show. It's really, it's very good.
So, you know, so Hillary is pregnant with twins.
Oh, did they have to green screen out her belly?
No, she just announced it like literally the 2 days before the show premiered.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then, and I probably shouldn't say this, but this will release maybe in a week or two.
Okay.
She got COVID.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Which, I mean, 2022 COVID, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
But.
Wait, what happened?
So I'm here because the production's just, it's shut down right now.
Okay. Got it. Yes.
Because I should be in Vancouver right now.
Yeah, you should be shooting.
But it shut down. So I was like, I was sitting there in this, and they give you, you know, it's fucking Disney. So you're in this yeah. nice suite.
Oh my
in
God,
Vancouver.
I'm so jealous of your life right now. I love it.
But I'm sitting there just like, I don't know anybody in Vancouver. So I'm yeah. fucking bored out of my mind. I'm like, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, and right. I'm like, do I get on Tinder?
Right.
And start swiping right, like, you want to go whale watching? There's only so many times you can rollerblade around a park or,
yep.
you know.
Oh, wow. Go he to brings a yoga. His rollerblades.
Yeah.
Okay.
So or go whale watching or take the fucking gondola.
Yeah.
So I just took off. I was like, I can't fucking do it.
Yeah.
So right now it's on pause. I have no idea.
It's on pause. Yeah. They'll bring you back when she's good
when
again.
She's good, yeah. I'm
sure. Which is freaking amazing.
But it must be scary also. When
just when you're back, you just. I know that's I was like, is she okay?
I'm sure
she's gonna be fine. She's I'm sure she'll be all right. But that is
it's good. It's good to hear that it's good.
It's very good. You should watch the pilot. And me, I am a TV whore. I try to engulf all of the media if I can so that I'm aware of, you know, what's shooting and what shows I'd be good for and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
And I think I have good instincts and that show's great.
Oh, good. I just hope they don't pare down my part so much because of like now they have time constraints.
Right.
That like I'm just like in it like. Ping.
Yeah.
Anyway. So anyway, but Tom McCarthy, so he's connected to that as well.
Yes.
And he just stopped acting. I mean, he doesn't.
Yeah.
You could tell that he just doesn't really want to act anymore.
But he's a director. He's a director. Creating now.
So my point is, when you're like a movie star or you're a director or one yeah. of these things, our weird, crazy childhood trauma induced need to
yeah.
perform as yes. a comic rack, I think it gets sated and you don't need it anymore.
Right.
Because I used to be like, if I never did acted or did comedy, what would right. I do?
But the director still gets a lot of attention. That's the
yes.
thing. They don't want me as the lead actor for Killjoy going out to these film festivals. They want me because I'm the writer and the director of the
yeah.
thing to talk about the film and accept the award.
Yeah.
So there is still you're still very present with things that you make
yeah.
and you still get a lot of the validation. I think it's maybe not as close as the acting and the comedy. I get what you're saying, but I'm like, meh. Him as a director, he's probably getting more props now because
yeah.
they go, oh, you did all of this other thing. And a director is seen as it's a higher end thing.
Yeah, it really
it's
is.
Like on the it's upper echelon.
Yeah. And everyone I know that's just like a pure actor. Like my friends are just pure actors and nothing else.
Right.
And they're doing really, really well.
Yeah.
When I talked to them, they definitely have like a little bit of a hamster wheel feel about their life. Yeah, I got to go to New Orleans, shoot this new movie. And then after that, I'm going to Arizona. Yeah, yes.
God, I wish. One.
Exactly, yeah. right? You're like,
give me that. Give me your fucking job.
But then
throw
also,
it over
you
here,
kind
man.
Of get like, I understand
it,
how
though.
It would feel like when you,
you're getting thrown around a lot.
At the end of the day, you don't have total agency
over your own stuff, which that would be stressful. I mean, I'm sure it's like for you as a comic, you do have some agency to go like, I'm not going to do that show in Austin, but if you need the money, you're going to do it. Yeah. And that's like, for me, sometimes choosing to decline an audition, even though the pay's like, okay, if I'm like, if I don't like it, I'm not going to do it. And sometimes when I'm really busy, it's tough because I go, I want to be home for a second and like fix my house.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't even have a house, fix my freaking studio apartment, but do stuff there, you know?
Yeah. It,
there is an ebb and flow in between like working a lot and getting paid for what you love to do, but like the downtime and being home, which I think like those actors who you're probably speaking about do get that time, and they, the rest of their time is taken up with work. And I'm like, I wish I was the happiest when I was shooting for 2 weeks on a feature film. And it was just every day you have to get up, and there was we had one day off in between then, the 14 days, every day, just get up and go to work. And I was tired. It's not like every day I'd arrived to set like happy go lucky.
Yeah.
You're tired and you got to do your job. And I was the lead. So there's a lot of lines. You got to do memorization every night.
The frustration, the misery is fun. Yeah.
It's because I got to do the thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who don't get to do the thing.
Yeah. And so it's good to remind yourself that. But whenever I do TV, I'm very thankful for, you know, any job. But I love the independent film process where you're immersed.
Right.
And you just have to like, it's like the difference between going to like therapy every week or going to like an immersive weekend group therapy in the woods. You know what I mean? Like, I want to feel like I'm being brainwashed by the world that I'm committing
to right
now.
Because independent filmmakers are passionate. They're passionate. All people. We are not getting paid at all to do this job. Whoever is there is getting paid minimal.
Yes.
And we're all there out of the love for the project.
Yep, 100%.
And that's it.
Yeah. And TV, it's good to be surrounded by that. There's so many rules. And that's great for the roles to protect the actors.
Sure.
But it really, it distances you from immersion into the creative world of it. 100%. If you're always back to your trailer, there's always meal and break and lunch and this and that. You're always kind of like, to feel like you're in the character is like, to lock into that is really hard, you know?
Yeah. I think it gets tougher. That's why a lot of people, I think, still, what is her name from? She was married to Chris Pratt before, but she makes a lot of indie movies now. And I'm blanking on
Anna Faris?
Yeah. Is that her? No, who's the dark-haired girl who played alongside Chris Pratt in the TV show? Dark hair. She's
Aubrey
like,
Plaza.
Thank you so much, Aubrey Plaza.
They were married.
No, I think I've made it up. Were they married?
They were married in Parks and Rec.
Great. They're married in that show. This is how bad I am in my memory. She has made two to three feature films that are all indie films in the last 4 years, and they're all very good, and I appreciate her for making every single one. Yeah. Every single one has been great, and I go, that's the career I want. Meaning, if I can make enough cool enough short films that somebody goes, let's try to give you money to make a feature, but I'd be like, get a team, somebody else directed, throw any script at me and I'll do it.
Yeah.
That is the life that I would want, because that's what she seems to be living, and I think it's great.
I remember Joseph Gordon-Levitt, when he was sort of being first put out there as like this hot lean man, and some of his studio films didn't really, and then he just did a bunch of indies, and they were fucking like Brick and all these indies were fucking amazing.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden his star rose again, and now he's, you know,
now he's,
I don't know if he's top lining films, but he's definitely like, you know, well,
he's in the Showtime super pumped, so he's in a big TV show on Showtime now.
So I definitely think that's, I remember when Dane Cook first got big and he was doing studio films after the first studio film, and they did the second one, and I was like, you should just do indies, dude. Just do cool little indies. Yep. People are like, where is he? And all of a sudden you have a film that wins Sundance, or just because you have the name now, you will be cast in a top tier indie film.
Yep.
But you got to have the perfect timing to know when to do that.
Yeah.
So actually, they just want to stay in the studio route.
Right.
Yeah. Those are really good first world problems that
It really, really, really
so,
is.
So So let's wrap this up because I know you got to go. So what are you looking towards? What's your 5-year situation? What are you looking toward? What's the goal here? What's the goal? Well, what are you doing with your life? Do your parents support you?
I just got a new manager, and he's been sending me out on some new auditions for like TV or you know, different things like that. Yeah. So it would be real nice to just book anything on TV. Would be so fun for me because I have never gotten audition through other agents before. That was for TV. It's like all film or features, and that I got through people reaching out to me, being like, "You want to come and audition for this thing?"
Yeah.
So I would love to just be more of a working actor. I am a working actor commercially for sure, but yeah, getting more into the TV world,
the guest star and the co-star,
exactly,
and all that shit.
Just all that stuff that I see people on there all the time, and I'm like, great, I could come on now. And then just making more indie films, because I would love to be like what Aubrey Plaza does. I'm like, great, I would love to be just an indie film girl. And
even if
it has to be genre where it's dark comedic horror, great. That's the reason I started making more horror and zombie stuff, because that genre is easier to break into.
Yeah.
It's more nichey. But
you don't have any feature scripts sitting around, do you?
I don't. People ask me that a lot. I'm like, no, I don't. God, the thought of me having to sit down and write a feature and to make it good would take years.
No, it wouldn't take years.
I don't know.
You just need a good premise and a good ending. If you have a good premise and you know how it ends,
yeah,
then the rest is easy.
It's just, I don't, what I do is I sit around and I think about acting. I watch TV, I watch films, I watch how people move, how they speak. This role, like I watched last because I'm like, I would be great for that show.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strong women and the writing is not shit and the people are not crap, and I believe it when they speak.
Yeah.
I sit around thinking more about acting and roles that I'd want to be in, which is why I make films with strong, independent women who are... Sam Jones is a badass. She's surrounded by incapable survivors, and she's the one who saves people.
Yeah.
Which I like that. I want to be in those roles, not just... I'm not fit for a person who seems weak or is just like a mom who's just there. It has... She's got to have some guts.
And that's how TV will probably want to like put you, like, okay, can you play the wife of this star,
right? Which would be fine if she's funny or
talk back to my fucking dickhead husband, is that possible?
Yeah Do I pull out a knife at any point and stab him? No. All right, I don't think it's for me. Yeah, so I don't know, 5-year plan is make more films, be in more stuff, and continue working. That's I love to be on set. That's my home.
And you never thought about stand-up comedy?
I did it for 2 years.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh. I used to be on Dat fan shows.
Uh-huh.
You know, good old Dat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to do his shows. I had a show, maybe it was like 4 years ago now. It was a Dat fan show. It was at the Ice House in Pasadena. And it was a good show. And I remember walking out with my friend Skylar, who I do short films with. And he's like, I feel like that was your show. And he's like, I felt like I was watching a star, because he thought that my set was really good. And I had been doing it for a couple of years. It wasn't like great right off the bat, right?
Sure.
I went to Pretty Funny Women with Lisa Sunstedt. That's how all women in comedy get started. And then, you know, doing shows. But I only did it, it was because I have a YouTube channel. People would always say, do you do stand up because you're funny? And I'm like, no. And then I gave it a shot. And in my brain, I just thought, if stand up gets big enough, people will cast me. It was never out of the love. And so I thought about it when I got off. I was like, that was so fun. I always had such a thrill. It was terrible before. I want to kill myself. Like, not really, but you want to throw up. It's stand up is just, it's all me. It's all my writing. It's all my voice. It's just a lot of pressure. But then once I get to perform, I write in characters and voices, and that makes it easier and more fun for me.
Yeah.
When I walked off stage, I felt so good. And then just after that, I don't know. I felt like I'm going to have to put in so much time and so many more years, and the passion there for me to become a stand-up comedian is not there. And I don't think that's fair. I'm really just doing it because I want to have fun on stage and I have comedic points of view, but I want to act. And it's not fair for other people who go to open mics Monday through Friday. I'm like, I can't compete with these people who are at Laugh Factory waiting in line with 100 people just to speak for 2 minutes to say, just for someone to clap for you or maybe laugh.
Yeah.
That just seems so daunting and terrible that I was like, I don't think I want to I don't want to do this.
Yeah, I've always said this about comics and actors. It's never the most talented people that make it.
Yeah.
It's the people who really fucking grind.
Who really want it. You got to fucking, you got to be at it. And that, that for me is more, I'll try to really grind as an actor and make more content and pay people to shoot little parts of a reel so that my reel is constantly updated and people just assume, I think she was on Succession because that seems like it was on Succession and it's not, but it seems like it.
Seems like it, yeah.
So that's like the grind for me is making content and just being good. If somebody watches something and they go, hey, why don't we ask her if she wants to be in our short film? If it's good, I don't really care so much about the pay. I do need some pay. I don't go out for free, but that's more where my heart and passion lives.
Awesome. I love it. Well, I'm a fan now, so I will definitely be checking out your work and judging it from the privacy of my computer.
Yes.
But thank you for coming up,
thank
Tara.
You for
You're awesome.
Me. This
and
was
people
a blast.
Can find you where? They can find you at?
You can find me on all the places. So Instagram at Tara Erickson. You can find me on Twitter. I try to tweet a lot at the Tara Erickson. My website is theteraerickson.com. You can IMDb me. I have a blog called talkingtara.com.
Oh, you have a blog?
I got a blog, but it doesn't.
Why not a vlog?
I have my vlog is my Instagram and my YouTube. So you can find me also on YouTube, Tara Erickson. Just search my name.
Okay.
You can become a Tara Trooper. They used to be called Idiot Army, and I literally just changed and did a rebranding where I was like, I'm going to call it because I used to say, hey, Idiot Army, it's me, Tara. And I changed it to Tara Troopers because I wanted it to be with my name, and there was a lot of monetization effects.
And you don't want to insult your audience.
Idiot. I know. People would say that, and I'm like, I called him that for 7 years. Nobody cared. Become a Tara Trooper. Join me. I'm all over the internet. You just put in Tara Erickson and you'll find me. TaraErickson.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.